Welcome to the Padded Room Podcast Insomnia. My name is Darian, and I can't fucking sleep! That's right, boys and girls, this is a little bonus content for you. This is going straight to the Patreon page for all of our premium subscribers. Thank you very much for your donations. I think this one's going straight to the $5 tier. I might just go ahead and put it out on the regular feed, too, just to give the rest of you inmates a little taste of what you're going to be missing. So what is insomnia? Well, it's me not being able to sleep at night. That's what it boils down to. What I'm going to be doing here on this side of the fence is going to be a solo show. Yeah, that's right. Just little old me. No Monica, no buddy, none of you people. Just me, myself, and I. And I'm going to be talking about more recent horror films that are in the independent league and things that you may that are creeping up on us, I guess I should say. Just little, things you read about in Rue Morgue, but you don't know where to find it yet. Well, I'm gonna track that shit down, and I'm going to watch it, and then I'm going to get on here and tell you about it, and that's pretty much how it's going to go down. How does that sound? Sounds pretty good to me, because, like I said, I can't sleep at night, and I got nothing better to do. So I might as well come in here and talk into my microphone instead of laying in bed staring at the ceiling wondering why I can't sleep, right? Oh, yeah. That's what's happening. For those of you that recall my solo years in the Padded Room Podcast, you'll know that I tend to go off on a couple of tangents from time to time. These things happen. I'm going to try to bring the Insomnia show in at around a half hour apiece. I may go a little bit longer depending on what kind of mood I'm in and what kind of show we're talking about. Sound good so far? Sounds good to me. I got nothing better to do. Let's go ahead and kick this this thing off then, shall we? I'm gonna kick you right in the face this week with the Black Coat's Daughter. Let's check out a trailer.
When you meet these people, do you say that she was murdered? You say that they had to do a blood test to see if her head matched the body.
Hey, Dad, just calling to see where you and Mom are, if you're coming.
Worst case, they come on Friday and everyone goes home and has a really nice break. After all, we can't let you live here.
You do know about the sisters, don't you? They worship the devil.
Is there something wrong?
Why are you doing this?
Do you believe in God, Joan? Ever tried to look for him? I look for him in the unlikely things that happen. Little coincidences.
Deedle, deedle, Black Coat's Daughter, what was in the holy water? Come to me.
Something funny. You smiled a little.
Funny? No. Why? I mean, I just wish you could stay and see my performance. That's all.
Woo, Daddy! What do you think of that shit? It didn't sound like much, did it? Sounded like a lot of talking and some pissed off girls, and that's basically, it has a lot to do with the movie. So I'm gonna go ahead and break this thing down for you. I'm gonna give you a spoiler alert, though, before I get to the very end, because, well, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I mean, because the, alright, never mind, I'll just go ahead and do the spoilers. The reason why I would normally do that, I think, on this show, but this time, The big reveal comes about halfway through the movie. And you're going to see it coming, I'll be honest with you. It's not hard to figure out. But we'll get into that in a second. So this is The Black Coat's Daughter. It's from 2015, although it just recently popped up. I don't know where it's been for the last 2 years. Starring Emma Roberts. You'll remember her, of course, from American Horror Story. And if you have some kind of a love affair for Evan Peters, then you know that's his present fiance. Even though I heard that they like to fight in public a lot, which to me is the best thing ever. I love it when couples fight in public. Emma Roberts, Kiernan Shipka. I like this young lady a lot. If you're wondering what Nurse Nicole looks like, check out Kiernan Shipka. She's like the spitting image of Nurse Nicole. You'll remember her from absolutely nothing, actually. She did a lot of voiceover work. Was in a remake of Flowers in the Attic and some Danny DeVito movie. And that's great. Anyway, who else we got here? Lucy Boynton, I don't know who that is. Lauren Hawley. The incomparable James Remar making an appearance in this one. I got to tell you, James Remar looks pretty good. He's got to be getting up there in the years. He's 63 years old, for Christ's sakes. He looks great. I'm pretty sure he's had some surgery, but I'm not going to hold that against him. Excuse me. Anyway, this one kicks off right in the middle of, we're at a young lady's Catholic boarding school, from what I gather. And we're just about to take off for our Christmas vacation. Now, there's three main characters that we have to deal with here. February, Catherine, and then Joan, I believe. Or Joni? Is that her name? Joan, yeah. That's Emma Roberts. So we're going to start, and the way this story plays out, it just follows one character, and then it hops to the next, and then the next, and then they all kind of interweave for a minute or two. Things get bloody here in a second. We're actually in upstate New York in the middle of the winter, which is about as drab and boring and just desolate and dismal and depressing as you can get. I'm sorry if you live in upstate New York, but if you do, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It looks miserable up there. Especially circa January or so. So we're going to start off with the character February. Was that her actual name? Rose. Why did I say February? It says, well, they're calling her Rose. Anyway, it says February. Maybe that meant what month this is taking place in, but that doesn't make any sense either. We'll skip over that. Anyway, her name is Rose. Basically, she's getting ready to get the fuck out of there, go hang with her parents, and we come to realize that she is actually pregnant. And I don't know exactly how that happens at an all-Catholic girls' school, but it's something I'm willing to learn and figure out. If there's any Catholic schoolgirls out there that want to get pregnant. Anyway, she is pregnant, and she's all pissed off, and apparently she has mastered the art of sneaking out of this place in the middle of the night and hooking up with a dude from, I guess, one of the nearby towns. I should mention that this Catholic school is, like, surrounded by woods also. That doesn't really play into anything, but that just sets the tone for what kind of a desolate, isolated place this is. Basically, what she's figured out is that she is pregnant, that, or at least she thinks she is. That sucks. So what that means to her is that she is not going to be going home to her parents for the fucking winter break. Instead, she has to stay there, wait for her boyfriend out in town to come pick her up, and then she has to break the news to him, which sounds like a giant pain in the ass. That sucks. From there, we cut to our next character, Catherine, or Kat. We open up with her in some kind of a nightmare sequence where she's basically looking at two dead bodies in a car. And she wakes up and she's all in a panic and she's kind of surmising that those were her parents who were on their way to get her, got in some kind of a car accident or something else, and now she's basically going to be marooned there. So that sucks for her. This cat is a crazy, I mean, she's not crazy, but she's a very quirky type of character. This is the last day before we're going to head off for spring for winter break. She's going to give a piano recital, and she's really pissed off because the fucking father superior or whatever his name, whatever, the guy that runs this place, is supposed to be there to watch her piano recital. Instead, he has to take off. So now she's all fired up at him. That sucks. But she's being very, she's not really being bitchy about it, but there's like a little hint of passive aggressiveness there. And she's like giving him the stink eye. And she's like, well, where are you going? And he's like, I have personal business in Albany. And she's like, well, how long is it going to take you to get there? He's like, I don't know, a couple hours. And she's like, well, you could make it back for my recital. And he's like, yeah, I could, but I'm probably not going to because it's personal business. And you're 12 years old anyway, so who gives a shit? He didn't actually say that. I'm paraphrasing. So that's fun. Sip of my coffee. So she gives the piano recital, and that's all well and good. And we're going to stay with these two characters for now. She is like, I think I want to call her like the outcast of the girls' school. Like, other chicks know her, but she's not really, didn't strike me as having too many friends, and she's kind of the quiet one. So now she does her piano recital. Everything's great. She gets a standing ovation or whatever. And then we get like a montage of all the other girls leaving the Catholic school. A lot of parents coming in to pick them up, a lot of getting into cars and packing luggage, and away they go. So what we're left with now is Rose and Kat. Now, Rose tells the administration there that she gave her parents the wrong date, and they'll probably pick her up sometime in the next week. That's well and good. Kat, on the other hand, cannot get a hold of her parents. She thinks she's pretty sure that they're dead, but she's going to keep calling because I guess they're actually going to kick these two girls out if they don't, you know. There's like a line where the Father Superior is like, well, you can't fucking live here. So everybody else is leaving, which means you guys got to get the hell out of here. So that's that. So that sucks. The Father Superior leaves, but the good news is that there's two elderly women that are sisters. I don't know if they mean that in the Catholic sense or if these two are actually related, but they stay there as like caretakers even when school's not in session. So what we're going to do is leave these two chicks in the care of the sisters. That's pretty cool. So now at least they don't have to worry about being kicked out in the cold. Excuse me. Holy crap. Woo! Let me get some more coffee here. Maybe that's why I can't sleep. It's because I... fuck it. Who cares? I'm already up and I'm already recording, so who gives a shit? Okay. So everybody leaves. Now the place is deserted. We got these two elderly sisters, and they are kind of... they're kind of cunty, I'd say. They're adhering to the structures and the bylaws of the Catholic school, so dinner is at this time, you got to be showered by that time, in bed by this time, and even though there's just these two chicks left. Okay, so we cut to the first night. Rose is making her grand escape to go hook up with her boyfriend so that she can tell him that she is pregnant. That's pretty much exactly what happens. She takes off, the boyfriend picks her up somewhere, and we don't really see too much of this guy. He looks like a turd. He drops her off, and we get like a very awkward conversation about how she's going to get it taken care of. And he's like, well, I want to be there, and, you know, how can I help? And she's like, fuck off. I don't know. I don't think she was really into this guy. I should mention that Rose wasn't all that hot either. She acted like she's really hot, but I don't think she was even the hottest young lady in this school. I think, what's her name there? Catherine, way hotter. Check her out. So that's pretty cool. She gets up, and like Rose was kind of tasked with keeping an eye on Catherine. I think Rose was like a junior and Catherine was like a freshman or something like that. Catherine seemed a lot younger than Rose. So Rose was tasked with keeping an eye on Catherine. So she gets out of the car. She starts looking around. She can't find Catherine. Catherine's not in her room. Well, shit. Now Rose is getting antsy because if anything happens to Catherine, it's her ass. So she starts looking around. She's like not finding her anywhere. So she decides to go down to the basement. And what she sees when she gets to the basement is pretty wacky, even by my standards. She gets down there. Apparently this place is heated by like a giant coal furnace that they have to just keep feeding. And it's got vents that go to each room, and that's how they keep it heated in the winter. So they got this furnace down there. Rose like comes around the furnace room and she spots Catherine. And Catherine is doing like a very weird, like almost like she's worshiping the furnace in a weird way. She's like down on her knees and she's like doing the, whoa, we're not worthy type of thing. But she's like very athletic with it. It's almost preternatural in a weird way. So she's like, she just kind of stops for a second and watches Catherine do this, and she keeps like bowing her head to the furnace, and you can see the flames are getting higher and shit. That's pretty creepy. I don't know about that shit, man. Why? What are you worshiping the furnace for? You know, if you're some kind of a devil worshiper, that's well and good, but this is a goddamn furnace. Don't be worshiping like modern appliances. Anyway, that's interesting. So now we cut to that night. Now Catherine is starting to act really weird. She's being even more standoffish and like talking even less. She keeps trying to call her parents. Nobody's answering. It's not even going to voicemail or anything. Right about this time is when we cut to Emma Roberts' character, Joan. Now, I'm not 100% sure how Joan fits into this whole thing. Because this is, you don't understand this just yet, but this is, we're shooting ahead 9 years into the future. And we'll, it's all going to make, well, it's sort of going to make sense. Maybe not. I don't know 100%. Basically, we're going to cut to Joan. We don't really know her yet or where she fits into this. She's basically walking down the street carrying a suitcase. She's in what appears to be a small town of some sort or some kind of a rural area. Not the same girls' school, but like a different area somewhere in New York. She comes to a bus stop, and she basically just sits down on the bus stop bench and kind of starts moping. We do notice, however, that at one point she like rolls a sleeve up on her jacket, and we see that she has like a medical tag. You know what I'm saying? Those weird wrist tag things they put you on you when you go to the hospital or the mental institute or some jails, you know, correctional institutes. I know they do that too sometimes. Not that I have any experience in that matter. I'm just saying I've seen them on TV. All right, so that's wacky. Apparently she just got out of a hospital or a mental institution. It's getting late. We're still in the middle of winter, whenever we are, and it's still upstate New York. So she's just marinating there on the bus bench. Pretty soon, old James Remar happens upon the scene. 63-year-old James Remar. Now, if you've ever seen The Warriors, you know that if you're sitting on a park bench and James Remar comes walking up on you, you get the fuck out of there. He's looking to dick you down, is what's happening. Unless you're Mercedes Rule and you got a rape whistle and some handcuffs and apparently some mad judo skills, you get the fuck on, dude. But this is not Ajax from the Warriors, my friends. It's just James Remar. he strolls up to her and he's like, hey, young lady, it's freezing fucking cold out there. And you are in the middle of winter and you're just kind of hanging out here by yourself. He plays a guy by the name of Bill. So he seems like a pretty nice guy. He's genuinely concerned for Joan. He's like, hey, come on, we'll take you. We're headed up north. So if you're headed that way, why don't you go ahead and hitch a ride with us? My wife's right over here in the car. I'm not some kind of a weirdo. Just come on. We'll take you, you know, as far as like I don't know, Portstown or something like that. So she's like, oh, fuck me. I am freezing and it is the middle of winter and I just escaped from somewhere, I guess, so I better go in this guy's car. So she gets in the car. We get to meet Bill's wife. Oh, excuse me. Her name is... I don't know what her name is. Linda, excuse me. So we get to meet Linda. Linda does not want any part of Joan being in the car or taking her anywhere. You can tell that from the moment she walks past the car. I'm not going to say Linda's a bitch, but she, I don't know, man. I think she probably had some inkling that Bill was going to try to fuck Joan or something like that. Or there was some other mischievous plot that he had in mind here. I don't know how that works. Anyway, they get in the car and they take off. They're headed up north. We get the idea, via some conversation, we get the idea that Joan wants to get to the same Catholic school that the the other two girls are at. Now, bear in mind, we don't know that she's 9 years in the future yet. So that's kind of weird. Now, about this time, we're going to cut back to 9 years in the past, where we have Rose and Kat. Wake up the next morning. Kat doesn't look so good, dude. She's, like, very pale, and her eyes are kind of, you know, she's got kind of like a methed out thing going on, and that's no good. They're sitting down with the sisters for lunch or whatever they're doing, and apparently at Catholic school you have to say grace before you do anything. I don't know. That's a Catholic thing, I guess. So there, Rose and the two sisters are saying grace. Kat basically decides that she's not going to do that. She just sits there quietly. One of the sisters, the more cunty of the two, decides she takes offense at this, and she's like, hey, how about you say grace, you bitch? And then Kat starts saying it, but she's being really whispery about it, and then she just starts laughing. And then the other sister is like, hey, what is your problem? And then Kat just stands up and throws up all over the food. a little shade of Troll 2 there. I mean, coming out the other end, I suppose, but still pretty funny. Okay, so now we're under the assumption that Kat is sick. So that's gross. Take her to the infirmary or the nurse's office or whatever you got there. And they're like checking her temperature and feeling her. And one of the nicer of the two sisters is like going to give her an aspirin or something. And she puts her hand on Kat's arm. And Catherine's like, take your hand off me, cunt. Whoa. A straight up demon voice coming at you. The other sister's like, what the f-? You ought to be ashamed of yourself. And they're about to get into Kat's ass when the phone rings. One of them goes to answer it. Turns out it's the Father Superior. He's coming back there because they don't really say, but I got the idea that Kat's parents had in fact been in whatever car accident, and he was coming back to the school to break the news to Kat himself, which is a shitty thing to have to do. But that's the bad news. The good news is that Kat is apparently possessed, so she'll probably be much better at taking bad news, I suppose. All right, that sucks. they're on the phone with Father Superior. Kat's just kind of giving him the stink eye, like with the big eyes that actress has. They call Rose over, and they're like, hey, Rose, you need to go shovel the parking lot there because Father Superior's coming, so go ahead and do that. And Rose is like, what? I didn't do anything. She just called you a cunt. Why do I have to go shovel? And they're like, just go do it. So I think that's the impression that I got, was that her parents were dead, and now everybody's walking on eggshells around Kat because we don't know just what the hell's going on. I mean, she's obviously sick, and she got real bitchy all of a sudden, but now somebody's going to have to break the bad news that her parents are both dead. So that sucks too. Now we cut 9 years into the future. And I'm going to tell you how I know this is 9 years in the future in a second. But back to Joan in getting picked up by the traveling Wilburys there and James Remar. They check into a hotel. They get Joan her own room, which is about the nicest thing you could possibly do. She takes a shower, and Joan is acting pretty weird too. She's like doing a lot of looking in the mirror. And you don't get to see Emma Roberts naked, though. I looked. But she is she's got like a, I don't know, kind of a fucking drug addict thing going on a little bit. A little gothed out. Pretty soon, knock, knock, knock on her hotel room door. She's like, oh, Jesus. She gets out of the shower. She's got a towel on. Opens the door. It's Bill, James Remar. Bill comes in, sits down, starts talking to Joan. He's like, hey, so we're going to take you as far as the, we're going up to, actually, we're going to the Catholic school, and that's about where we're going. So we can take you as far as that. We go up there every year because over the last 9 years, 9 years ago, our daughter was there, and she has passed on. That's pretty sad. But apparently they make this pilgrimage every year about this time of year, Bill and Linda, up to the Catholic school to, I guess, pay respects to the memory of their daughter. Bill seems like an all right guy. I thought he was going into her hotel room to try to fuck her. He did not, because apparently he got all that out of his system back in New York during the late 70s when he was being chased by the Turnbull ACs. All right, so he's like, hey, you know, I just want you to know that we're not trying to screw with you or anything. Why don't you, there's a restaurant downstairs, why don't you come down and I'll buy you dinner, and you look pretty hungry, so let's go do that. She's like, okay, great. Goes downstairs, goes down to the restaurant. She sees Bill sitting there by himself. He goes, they, you know, order some food and stuff, and then she's like, about this time, he pulls out a picture of the daughter of his that was that is passed on. And sure as shit, it's Rose. So now we know that we're 9 years in the future. That's how I drew that conclusion. Okay, well, that's kind of shitty. So apparently Rose is not going to last much longer in the past, is what we're saying. All right. Joan excuses herself to go use the restroom there in the restaurant. She goes to the restroom, comes back. She's on her way back, and she sees a cop talking to Bill. Now she gets all nervous, and she grabs a steak knife off a dirty dish, and she's like, okay, I don't know what's going on here, but just in case something gets weird. She waits for the cop to leave, then she goes back to sit down with Bill. Bill's like, hey, that cop was just saying there's a nasty storm front coming in tonight, so we're going to go ahead and hit the road now. They're going to box our food up for us, and we got to get moving now, so let's go ahead and get in the car. That's a little fishy. That seemed a little fishy to me. She's like, all right, great. She's still got the steak knife on her. Goes down, gets in the car, I guess gets whatever stuff she has, gets in the car with Linda. Linda's like being bitchy again. She's like, did he tell you about our daughter? Did he tell you she was still alive or some weird shit? I don't know. She's just being very standoffish and bitchy about the whole thing. Okay, so now they get back on the road. Now we cut back to 9 years in the past. Father Superior, whatever his name is, shows up there at the girls' school with like a deputy or something like that. Well, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. First, we cut back to Rose. She finished shoveling the parking lot, and apparently she didn't have anything to do after that, so she just went back to her room and laid down in bed like she's going to take a nap. She's like, okay, well, I'm just going to take a nap here. Pretty soon she starts hearing weird sounds and stuff. Not like anything creepy, just like weird thuds. So she decides she's going to go up and check on Kat. She goes to find Kat. The cat's not in her room. So then she starts looking around the rest of the school. She starts seeing weird blood stains and shit. She gets to the sisters, I guess, living quarters or whatever they call that. And sure as shit, both sisters have been stabbed to death. I mean, like brutal, big time. Rose is like, well, fuck this shit. I'm out of here. She goes hauling ass for the door. Kat cuts her off and just stabs the shit out of her right there in the hallway. Big time. Shank, 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 shank. This is a pretty good little stab scene, you know? It looked like they put... It was probably on par with Starry Eyes as far as stabbing scenes goes. It sounded bad. And it looked bad, too. It looked painful. All right, now we're going to cut about, an hour or two into the future. Father Superior rolls up. He's got a sheriff's deputy with him, which is what led me to believe that there was some bad news for Kat. They can't get in. All the doors are locked. So they're walking around the building trying different doors to get in. They come to one. They finally get in like a side entrance. They're walking around calling for the sisters. They come across they come around a corner and they see the two sisters minus their heads. Oh, shit. The deputy immediately calls for backup. Father Superior's like, holy fucking, I'll just be sitting in the car then. Now we cut down to that big furnace area again. Basically, what we're seeing here as the police officers are filing down there, we see Kat. She has murdered both sisters and Rose, cut all three of their heads off, and is doing that weird prayer thing to the furnace again. But now she's got the three severed heads sitting next to her. Which is a nice touch, I thought. That's a good way to, spruce the place up a little bit, I suppose. Ed Gein style, if you want to go that route. And she's doing that weird I'm not worthy thing again, and it's pretty creepy. One of the sheriffs rushes in. Kat still has that knife on her, so she turns around, and she's, like, walking towards the police officer. He's got a shotgun. He's like, drop the knife, bitch. She doesn't drop it, so he shoots her with a shotgun. that's pretty bad. She goes down, but apparently survives because we cut to maybe, a day or two later, she wakes up in a hospital bed. She's all fucked up. She's got like the IV going in and out and all that, and the fucking EKGs going on. In walks Father Superior. He walks in, he takes one look at her, and he's like, oh, poor child. And then he leans in really close and whispers to her, and he's like, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to fucking throw you out of this little girl, you piece of shit. And then he just, like, breaks out his weird Catholic exorcism kit and just goes to work on her. This part's pretty cool. Because we actually, for a second, kind of get to see the demon that was in Kat. She's being exorcised, and she just kind of turns her head to the side for a second. We get to see, like, a silhouette of the demon, and it kind of looked like a giant rabbit, to be honest with you. It's like, or maybe like one of those things from Where the Wild Things Are, you know, with the big stupid horns. All you see is a silhouette. It looks, I would say it looks like Cousin It with big stupid horns, or possibly Donnie Darko. I don't know. Take your pick. It's like it has left Kat, but it's still in the room, and apparently she's the only one that can see it, because she looks over at it, and she says, "Don't go," and then the demon just vanishes. Okay, that's weird. Now we cut back to 9 years in the future with Joan. They're getting pretty close to the girl's school, and she's like, "Oh my God, pull over, I'm going to be car sick." And Linda is like, "Bill, do not pull over, don't pull over here, you know better than this." Bill pulls over, Bill pulls over anyway, which I would too. I don't want her throwing up in my car. And then Joan pulls out that steak knife and just starts stabbing the shit out of Linda and Bill. Kills them both. I guess they were already within walking distance of the school, because she just gets out, takes her suitcase, and starts walking towards the school. Now, we're 9 years in the future. Apparently in that 9 years, the Catholic school is completely shut down. All the windows are barred and boarded up, and the window and the doors are all locked. She manages to find a way in. She creeps down to the basement, finds that furnace, and I guess there's still like blood on the floor or something. She just kind of puts her hand on the furnace and does like a yowch, like it's too hot, ow! And then she gets her suitcase and walks out. She gets about halfway out the front door down the main driveway, and then she just stops and starts crying. So that's the end of the movie, too, man. I don't know what else to tell you. That's all that happened. I don't know how Joan exactly fits into this equation. I love the story with Kat and the possession and the murders. That was badass. I don't know what... At first, I thought Joan was an older version of Kat. And that could be. Maybe Joan's a pseudonym or a name she made up or something. But it didn't really seem like it, because Emma Roberts looks nothing like that other chick. What was her name? The one that looks like Nurse Nicole? Kiernan Shipka. And if you ask me, Kiernan Shipka, much hotter than Emma Roberts. I'm not a huge Emma Roberts guy, though. She looks kind of weird to me. She's got like a lazy eye thing going on. I'm not attracted to that. Anyway, that's your movie, inmates and Patreon subscribers. I think it's a good show. I liked it a lot. I'm sorry if I spoiled this for you, because... the turn comes about halfway through the movie. So if I was going to not spoil this for you, this would be a very short episode. So I feel like I had to do it. Anyway, sorry about that. Great show. Very atmospheric. Little bit on the slow burn type of a thing. But once the violence ramps up, it goes full tilt on you. I think you'll dig that. Plenty of blood. No boobs, but still pretty good show. Very drab. Very depressing. I don't know, doesn't necessarily make you feel dirty or anything, just kind of, I don't know, I think it zeroed in on like a alone during the holidays vibe, and that really sucks, especially if you're in a shitty Catholic boarding school in the middle of upstate New York, where the weather sucks, and you may or may not be pregnant. Let's not forget about that part, okay? All right. Patreon subscribers, thank you very much for joining me, and thank you very much for your continued donations. I'm going to try to make this a regular segment, and I'm going to try to get Buddy and Monica to do something very similar. I'll probably throw this on the regular RSS feed, just to show everybody else what they're missing, and then we'll continue on with this nougaty goodness as planned. If you're not already subscribed to the Padded Room Podcast, please think about checking that out, although I don't know why you would be listening to this and not that. That doesn't make any sense at all. I don't know how you'd even know about this. Anyway, I'm going to try and get some sleep now. You guys take care of yourselves. I love you so goddamn much, to quote Shane Diablo. And let's do this again.
Yeah.